Welcome to Virginia On Demand, a weekday podcast from Radio IQ News featuring the top stories from around Virginia. I'm Nicholas Yee, sitting in for Jeff Bosser. Candidates for Congress are scrambling to adjust to a new political reality in the wake of a Supreme Court decision last week. Michael Pope has the latest.
Henrico prosecutor Shannon Taylor will be taking on Rob Whitman instead of John McGuire. Former Congressman Tom Perriello will be challenging John McGuire instead of Ben Klein. And Congressman Eugene Vindman will be running for re-election in his own district rather than taking on Whitman. J. Miles Coleman at the UVA Center for Politics says Delegate Dan Helmer and all the other candidates who were going to run in a redrawn so-called lobster district this year might end up running 2 years from now.
I'm sure state Democrats are probably going to try another remap attempt within the next few years. So maybe there will be a new District 7 in 2028. So in a sense, maybe that campaign might never end. That started this year, right? So that's probably the messiest one.
As for this year, Democrats feel pretty good about the likelihood of unseating Jen Kiggins and maybe even Rob Whitman. Lewis Jacobson of the Almanac of American Politics says Democrats might even be able to bring a serious challenge to John McGuire if the popularity of President Donald Trump and Republicans continues to decline.
If they can juice that a little bit more, or if they can get better than their national 5 or 6 point edge in Virginia specifically, that is what they would need to flip additional districts beyond those first two, the first and the second, that are definitely in play.
Candidates don't have much time to figure out districts where they want to run. The deadline to submit all the signatures and paperwork is 2 weeks away. I'm Michael Pope.
Many local newspapers in Virginia and across the country have either vanished or been folded into larger conglomerates, leaving many communities without important information.
You know, somebody needs to keep up with the city council and the board of supervisors and the school board and keep the local police in line and ask questions and demand answers.
We'll have more in our featured story from Sandy Hausman coming up in about 10 minutes here on the podcast. Governor Abigail Spanberger signed a paid family and medical leave bill into law Monday, making Virginia the first state in the South to offer the benefit.
We're empowering millions of Virginians with the security, dignity, and peace of mind they deserve. And we are giving small and mid-sized businesses a new way to recruit talented people to their workforce.
Starting in 2028, Virginians who are caring for a newborn, a sick family member, or a veteran, or are recovering from a health condition will be able to tap into what amounts to a new state-run insurance plan similar to unemployment. Domestic abuse survivors will also be covered. The measure provides as much as 12 weeks off at 80% pay. It's estimated to cost $9 a paycheck for someone making $72,000 a year. Opponents of a Google data center in Botetourt County have been frustrated by a lack of information, including how it will draw power. Mason Adams spoke with Google officials and has more.
The tech giant has not released much specific information about a potential data center it plans to build near Daleville. Many of the details are shielded by non-disclosure agreements with local government agencies and other partners. But Google formally announced its intentions around the data center with the press release in March, and company officials are beginning to discuss the project. Clay Alsop is regional head of data center public affairs for Google.
This is, I would say, kind of in the middle scale for Google data centers. The exact power usage, we still don't quite know yet.
Alsop compared the Botetourt County data center complex with its facility in Lenoir, North Carolina, which went online in 2007. In 2015, Google announced it would purchase energy from a nearby Duke Energy solar farm to power parts of that facility.
Specifics for the site are still to be determined as we work through that. This site is in Virginia, and our power agreements with APCO will comply with the Virginia Clean Economy Act.
The Clean Economy Act phases out fossil fuels by 2050, which suggests Google will power the Daleville facility with renewables like solar or wind. Another Google spokesperson said the company frequently functions as a, quote, catalyst to help bring green, clean energy onto the grid sooner. Officials at the Southwest Virginia Data Center Transparency Alliance pointed to Texas, where Google is reportedly working with a company to build a large natural gas-fired power plant to power at least some of a data center campus there. In Roanoke, I'm Mason Adams.
The Virginia Department of Forestry says it responded to more than 400 wildfires during the state's spring wildfire season. Those blazes burned more than 4,500 acres of land and damaged 14 structures, including three homes during the season that runs from February 15th through April 30th. While the season is over, officials say continued drought conditions may keep the wildfire risk elevated through the end of this month. Because of the drought, the U.S. Forest Service has issued a ban to open fires along a 12-mile section of the Appalachian Trail where it crosses Mount Rogers National Recreation Area in southwest Virginia. Virginia's Attorney General has appealed Democrats' redistricting loss to the Supreme Court. Brad Kuttner has this report.
In the legal filing, Attorney General Jay Jones asked the nation's highest court to overturn the ruling of the state's highest court. Jones didn't offer additional comment, though in a phone call late Monday, Senate Majority Leader Scott Saravelle spoke on the issue moments before the appeal to SCOTUS was filed.
Well, first of all, I can totally understand why a lot of people were extraordinarily upset that the Supreme Court of Virginia just threw out 3 million votes. The plan is that we intend to appeal the case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Jones' legal filing argues the Supreme Court of Virginia overstepped its authority in trying to intervene in the state legislature setting the rules for a federal election. He also claims the state's high court made a, quote, grave misreading of federal law, which expressly fixes a single day for the election of a representatives and delegates to Congress. Saravelle explained it as such.
Both the United States Constitution and federal law in terms of how the United States defines federal elections. And while the state can regulate the manner of elections, we don't get to regulate when election day is.
The argument comes after the Supreme Court of Virginia found the first vote held by legislators beginning the constitutional amendment process took place during an ongoing election, voiding its result. The appeal seeks an administrative stay of the state's court's ruling, but it needs it fast. Saravelle said the computers used in Virginia's elections are old and require time to program. He pointed to a May 12th deadline from the Virginia Department of Elections, included in earlier court briefs, that likely put changes this year out of reach unless SCOTUS intervenes. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
A natural gas utility that serves much of Southside and Central Virginia wants to increase its base rates by more than 11% this fall. Columbia Gas of Virginia has asked the State Corporation Commission to approve the rate increase that would go into effect in October, according to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. If granted, the typical residential customer would see their bill increase about $11. Columbia wants another more than 3% increase on the books for October 2027. The utility plans to charge the higher rate on an interim basis and would reissue refunds if state regulators disapprove of the price hike. Company officials say the increase is needed to continued improvements to its distribution system and to accommodate for sustained demand. The state government will help the city of Radford in the New River Valley after a state auditor determined it is in, quote, financial distress. Radford's financial woes are largely tied to years of inaccurate revenue projections and more than $6 million in overdue payments to Appalachian Power. The state is set to provide a financial turnaround specialist and will set up an oversight team to manage the city's recovery process. Proposed cuts to the federal Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, or WIC, may add pressure on low-income families in Virginia. Yi Ching Wang from WHR News in Norfolk has more.
Advocates say WIC helps pregnant women and their children buy essentials like milk, fruits, and infant formula. Virginia serves about 104,000 people through the program, but less than half of eligible residents participate. Sabrina Davis with Hampton Roads Food Pantry Reset Inc. says many families who rely on WIC also depend on other benefits to afford groceries, such as SNAP, another federal program that saw cuts last year.
It's really a domino effect. We cannot absorb the cost of what it would take to continue to feed these families when they're impacted by these changes. We do the best we can, but there is no way that we can absorb all of this.
National data shows 80,000 Virginians could see cuts to their WIC benefits as high as 75%. Yi Ching Wang, WHRO News.
State health officials are investigating a confirmed case of measles in a school-aged child that lives in Buckingham County in Central Virginia. The State Department of Health says that child has not traveled recently, so it believes the virus is circulating locally. Officials are encouraging county residents to check their MMR vaccination status to make sure they're up to date. Free and low-cost vaccines are available through state programs for those who qualify. In the last 20 years, about 3,400 newspapers in this country have folded, leaving many areas without a daily or weekly paper. One big reason? The internet has cut deeply into advertising revenue. On the other hand, the internet makes it possible for individuals to cover communities without a big financial investment. Sandy Hausman reports on how they're serving their communities with news online.
Hillary Holliday began her reporting career at her hometown newspaper in Orange County, Virginia. Later, she'd get a Ph.D. in English and land a teaching job at the University of Massachusetts. But she missed the place where generations of Hollidays had lived and decided to move back.
My family roots go way back in Orange County, and I miss the paper I had worked for, the paper I had really loved.
Like many small-town publications, it had been purchased by Lee Enterprises, a publicly traded company that buys newspapers, sells off their real estate, and cuts staffing to boost the bottom line. Often, they become what she and Augusta County journalist Chris Graham call ghost papers.
You notice when your local paper suddenly has stories from Fredericksburg and Charlottesville and very little local content.
In our area here, the News Virginian is a ghost newspaper at this stage. Unfortunately, that's the paper I started at. It has a name, it has a website, but it has no local reporters.
So he and his wife, Crystal, decided to start their own publication online, the Augusta Free Press, covering Stanton and Waynesboro, Harrisonburg, Charlottesville, and the counties that surround them.
You know, somebody needs to keep up with the city council and the board of supervisors and the school board and keep the local police in line and ask questions and demand answers.
And Holliday launched a Substack newsletter called Bird Street.
I wanted to pay tribute to the most recent location of the old Orange County Review.
Her website draws 10,000 views each month, including some paid subscribers, and there are a handful of advertisers. The Augusta Free Press doesn't sell subscriptions, but does accept donations, and has a number of advertisers who reach a surprisingly large number of locals.
We were averaging about 1 million page views a year. We're now over 7.5 million page views a year.
And he's discovered some of them check in from places like Richmond and Washington.
There are people outside of our little walls here, our two sets of mountains, that, you know, are actually reading us.
The Free Press doesn't shy away from controversy. In a region that has favored Republicans at the polls, Chris and Crystal Graham did not hesitate to oppose a move in Virginia to ban gay marriage.
My thinking was, all right, every advertiser we've got, they're going to pull out. We're going to get angry emails and people are going to pitchfork and everything else. And the response was positive.
Holliday also tackles hot topics like the proposed high-voltage power line stretching across 9 counties, including Orange, or plans to remove the Rapidan Dam.
That's within walking distance of my house. And my father, as a 16-year-old, helped build the dam, so I've heard about it all my life.
Still, Holliday does not object to taking the iconic dam down, given reasonable arguments from scientists who believe it will open miles of spawning habitat for fish. She notes letters to the editor often concern environmental issues.
It shows how concerned people are in Orange County about this rural landscape that we treasure. And that's something that unites people, no matter where they are on the political spectrum.
As do the arts. Holliday gives them virtual ink and has recently published Orange County's first literary magazine, Bird Whistle.
Lots of my neighbors happen to be writers or artists. Who knew?
Both Holliday and Graham lament the loss of larger local newspapers, important training grounds for generations of journalists.
I worry about reporters starting out now that end up at news sites that don't have much in the way of editorial guidance.
But for now, Holliday, Chris, and Crystal Graham will keep on sharing news of the communities they love by reporting online and expanding their reach through podcasts and social media.
I guess I joined the 21st century just to reach people where they are. Every day I see something out there that I want to try.
I'm Sandy Hausman.
Weather-wise, across the listening area, Sunny conditions today. Highs will be in the upper 60s and mid-70s. This evening, fairly clear, a little breezy, especially after midnight. Low temperatures in the mid-40s and lower 50s. That's a wrap for Virginia On Demand for Tuesday, May 12th. As a reminder, you can subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and do tell your friends and family about it. I'm Nicholas Yee, subbing in for Jeff Bossert on behalf of Radio IQ News. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful day.